Hey everyone, welcome. This week on Myopia Defended Childhood, we watch Goonies, another Corey movie, starring Sean Astin, among others. I know when we do movies like this, people are worried that this is going to be some sort of nostalgia buster, that people are going to be really bummed out because we're talking about one of their childhood favorites and we hated it. Well, I can guarantee you, we're going to make fun of it. That's the name of the game, but we didn't hate this movie, so rest assured that as goofy as it is, it was perfectly enjoyable. Next, I want to remind you that we have joined up with a network, and we're giving this thing a go. So please, we will have our first Patreon episode on Alien out probably by the time you hear this, if not very soon. So check out the Here Be Tigers Patreon. We're all over their website as well, so you'll be able to find it really easily if you search for Myopia Patreon or Here Be Tigers with a Y Patreon. Finally, if you're listening, and I know you are, I guess, please join us on social networking. Share what you find, the Twitter, everything. We're there. It's exciting. And if you share us, it allows us to do more exciting things, which is good for us, good for you, and allows us to get more exposure so we can do more fun, exciting things. So, thanks. Welcome to Myopia Defended Childhood. This week, we've touched on a movie that we shouldn't have done, but all of you wanted us to. We did The Goonies, a montage of children who were harassed by producers. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defended Childhood. On the panel, we've got
author Matthew W. Quinn. Check out my new book, Battle for the Wastelands.
Hello, this is Daniel. I'm definitely going to throw that mama from the train.
So, we did The Goonies, which is quite possibly the movie the most of you have seen that we've done, at least one of them. I mean, yeah. This is a universally beloved movie.
It's so strange how the cult around this has built up over the years.
Matt, you nailed it when we were watching it, which is that this was one of those ones that was just on TV all the time, right? You said you saw it on Disney?
Yeah, I saw it on Disney as a little kid. I watched it all the way through Sloth in the basement. I got scared and turned it off.
And he was 31 at the time.
How old were you when you first saw it?
Me? I think it was on the Disney Channel back when it was new, so probably when I was in preschoolish.
That's fair.
You were turning things off. That's awesome.
Or maybe went somewhere else. Point is, I did not watch beyond the first reveal of Sloth in Chains.
That's fine. No reason not to. I get it. John Mutzjak looks like Zippy the Pinhead in this. He's a football player who died at 38. Hey, this was one of those things.
Oh, boy.
Another Hollywood tragedy. I think it was drugs.
I mean, it could have
been.
He
was a football player back in the 1980s.
I mean, it was probably brain trauma. Because everyone's seen this movie, we still have to do the everything. Although this was maybe the first time I'd seen it all the way through.
I think that was the case with me. I mean, this is another thing that gets referenced so much where you can kind of just take a bunch of scenes from later individual movies and recreate this if you really wanted to.
Well, and to me, it also has that stank of Ferris Bueller. I may have seen that movie all the way through once or twice, but I've seen the whole movie like 30 times.
Sure.
Which is also probably one of the reasons we might never do Ferris Bueller. People have asked us, and that's not really our bread and butter. This movie, at least, remember last year, we already did a Precocious Kid Month this season,
mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that I keep harping on, but damn, this is the most precocious these kids. And they just give them, they go on and on. How many soliloquies that turn into monologues that turn into nothing does Sean Astin have?
Yeah, one of the kids, he's down there in the bottom of the well when they could all escape because the country club kids wanted to pull them up. And he said, makes this big spiel about how now their parents helped them and now they got to help their parents or something.
It was the 80s. That was the mentality. You can trust everyone over 30.
Do you need to do a plot? Let's do it. Okay, do it.
It's very brief for those who haven't seen this. they live in Astoria, Oregon. There's this local land developer who's going to buy out the neighborhood that the Goonies live in. And in particular, Sean Astin and Josh Brolin's dad, because they're brothers, has been in arrears on his mortgage. So he's next in line, basically.
Right.
While they're in their attic, they discover a treasure map to One-Eyed Willie's Fun Times. It's in a back... No, it's One-Eyed Willie's Pirate Ship and Gold. How that ended up in Oregon, I don't know. But they go out to find One-Eyed Willie's treasure. To make a long story short, they find where the treasure is, but it's at beneath the hideout of these local criminals, the Ferrellis, and so they're trying to find the treasure, and the Ferrellis are chasing them when they realize what the kids are up to.
And meanwhile, it turns out the Fratellis have a younger brother who's like freakishly strong and deformed. They keep chained in the basement.
Fratellis?
That sloth.
Fratellis? Fratellis.
Fratelli.
I think I said Fratellis.
You're fine.
God.
I mean, I would not put this movie to make them the Fartellis.
All right.
So yeah, I mean, that's it in a nutshell. Yeah. This movie has everything the 1980s wanted. One of the various Corys. Weird, bouffanted girls, tough guys, a real estate developer trying to buy up a town.
Josh Brolin on a tricycle.
It's a snobs versus slobs comedy at times.
One of the country club kids grabs him by the hand while he's riding a bike next to his car and floors it.
Yeah. And expects the girl to find that attractive, and she doesn't.
Unnecessarily dark scenes involving threats of violence against children.
Yep.
And I'm going to shove your hand in a blender.
Yes.
All this movie. So we can start at the beginning. One cold, rainy day, we are introduced to Data. It's Ki Hung Kwan.
Mr. Data?
Yeah, right.
Also known as Short Round.
He's Short Round. He's also in, well, a bunch of stuff. He was the token Asian. He was also in X-Men, apparently. But yeah, he's most famous for being Indiana Jones, Short Round, in Temple of Doom, which he's kind of great in.
Using the same exact accent and inflection in this movie.
Yeah. And for those of you who've also asked us to do this one, he's in Encino Man. So, you know, we might do Encino Man one day.
Isn't Sean Astin in Encino Man?
He is as well. Together again.
Oh, boy.
If he doesn't appear in season
three. Goonies never say die.
No, I guess they don't.
I guess not. They're both still alive. Although, speaking of characters who are dead, he should appear in season four of Stranger Things, which is already filming.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Kwan. I mean, he'd be great, right? And I was wrong. He was not the one in Revenge of the Nerds, apparently.
Oh, okay.
The one who's taking beaver shots.
I've never seen Revenge of the Nerds, so I had no idea what you were talking about.
It is
about
a lot about rape. In fact, it ends on a rape scene. So, hey. And then they turn out to be the heroes, so it's okay. Ooh, the 80s is weird. We're introduced at the beginning to this gaggle of kids. It's, like you said, Sean Astin playing Mikey and his older brother, Josh Brolin, who's like literally working out the entire first act of this movie.
To Cyndi Lauper music videos.
He sure is. And then we are introduced to Mouth, who is Corey Feldman, and Data, who literally comes into the Indiana Jones theme on a ripcord he's put between the houses.
Yep. He's basically like low-budget Inspector Gadget, I guess, because of just how much stuff he's wearing under that coat of his.
Yeah, he's wearing a trench coat, and he's got all these various devices underneath that can come in surprisingly handy.
When they work.
And they, well, which is the joke.
You start calling him Peltzer.
No, I'm not going to do that. You're welcome to do that.
And then finally, we're introduced to the worst character who has ever been put to film, Chunk. So let's talk to Chunk.
Oh, boy, Chunk. Well, first and foremost, whoever played Chunk apparently ended up having a very successful legal career. So good on you, sir.
Yeah, good on you, sir, indeed.
He's likes to tell lots of lies. We have a major boy who cried wolf situation. He's also more a little bit chunky, hence the name, and he is always getting everyone else into trouble. He's so annoying.
He's clumsy. It's the way they paint these characters is so broad, because if you look at them, which this is kind of a strength and kind of a weakness, if you look at them, you know exactly who they are. Like Josh Brolin's the athletic older brother who's trying to protect them. Sean Astin's the smallest one and therefore supposed to be undergoing the biggest hero journey. Chunk's the oafish clumsy one. Then we've got Data, who's supposed to be the smart, nerdy one.
There are so many cliches in this that it might as well be a John Hughes movie.
Right.
Were they cliches then, or did they become the cliches?
John Hughes movie, man. It's the same time period. This is the,
you know, just because I'm the jock and she's the outsider and he's the nerd and he's the guy with the pot doesn't mean we're not cliche. Oh, dude, it's John Hughes.
Although in this case, the movie doesn't, you know, try and make that the whole point. It's just like, oh, it's like George Lucas and those old serials. It's like, I'll just take random archetypes and reformat them into something.
By the way, in case you're curious, IMDb trivia did not disappoint. The music that plays on Data's stereo when he swings through the front door of Brandon Mikey's house early in the film is the James Bond theme song composed by Monty Norman. 4 years after this, Robert Davi would play the main antagonist in the James Bond film License to Kill,
where his henchmen took Felix Leiter's new wife on a nice honeymoon.
Mission Briefing coming back this year. And Goose. It's so funny to see him because here he's like a lovable, goofy villain. Like, yes, they do threaten Chunk, but yeah, that's not Davi. That's Mama, who should be thrown from aforementioned train.
Yes.
But here he's just kind of a goofy, bumbling. Him and Joey Pants are brothers.
I was wondering when you were going to say Joey Pants was in this movie.
Which is the one who was singing?
That's Robert Davi.
Because one of them has an opera-level voice. If only he had made better life decisions.
Robert Davi is a classically trained opera singer.
Yeah, he is. I mean, with a face like that, he is destined for the stage, man. I love me some Robert Davi. And he plays a good kid villain. Like, in another time, in another place, and you could find a short, goofy person. Joey Pants, for example. The two of them could have been the Wet Bandits in Home Alone. Just roles reversed, right?
How did that not happen? How is Joey Pants not in, not one of those two?
Because he auditioned for the part and Joe Pesci bit his throat out.
I can believe that.
But I mean, Daniel Stern is perfect. And by the way, I pointed out to the guys, I've actually been here with my wife where they filmed some of this stuff. If you ever go to Portland, Oregon, and then drive to Tillamook or to the coast, you drive through this woods, and it's gorgeous. Like, the filming, the actual city that we see, the little village of Astoria, and then the surrounding forests, it's beautifully shot. And then we enter Universal Studios theme parks. Like,
which also actually looked pretty good. I just don't understand how any of that worked.
I remember seeing this when I was a kid. They were talking about how I think that the ship had gotten trapped in a cave, and the pirates, instead of doing the sensible thing and digging their way out, because they're apparently down there for some time, decided, let's turn this into a bunch of death traps.
No, I think Sean Astin was talking about that when they first found the map. He somehow knew the whole history of One-Eyed Willie.
Yep.
Which it took me many, many years to understand that joke.
Oh, you.
But anyway, what was a pirate ship, though, doing all the way in Oregon?
Well, I'll be generous and say maybe they were raiding the Manila Galleon and for the Philippines, but they're way too far north. Maybe don't do the research.
I'm thinking.
Do you want
that's
an answer,
right,
or are you just going to keep bullshitting us, man?
That's what I'm saying. I'm more realistically, they just probably didn't think that through.
I think
because it's Hollywood,
or the Spanish were that high up. The Spanish went all the way up to Middle California, and you're not that far away.
But I think One-Eyed Willie is supposed to be British.
People were robbing the British or the Spanish. If he's a pirate, he's not robbing British people. He's robbing Spaniards.
Yeah, but it's saying the Manila Galleon was a lot further south. So, I mean, who's he robbing up there?
The Spanish in California.
The Spanish in California. You would hide a few hundred miles away, so you're not found.
Yeah. I'm just more used to hearing about, in the great tradition of 90s hip-hop, I'm more used to hearing about the East Coast than the West Coast.
Well, and for you, a Carolingian, as you are, that's where all the fun pirates died.
Yeah.
That's where they got Blackbeard. And, you know, they cut his head off and his body swam around Ocracoke Island 6 times. And then he laid down a family and has a reality show or whatever the story is.
The Headless Pirate reality show. And somehow he fathered children without a head. This could be fun.
I'd watch it.
I'd watch. I mean, keeping up with the Carolinas.
Keeping up with the Carolingians.
Here comes Honey Blackbeard.
that wins. We're good. And then after a few seasons, he ends up with Dancing with the Stars, but he keeps stepping on the dancer's feet because
does he wear a garish costume like Sean Spicer?
They all do.
They all do. And he might be the most garish of them all.
Wait, that wasn't Melissa McCarthy? God damn it. I thought that was Melissa McCarthy.
They're the same person.
I've never seen them in the room together. I'm just saying.
I mean, because when he gets exposed to real people, he starts to burn.
She disguised herself as a man to infiltrate the Trump administration. It's like Yentl.
Or as you like
the idea
it.
That a Jewish woman would be in the Trump administration is truly remarkable.
Why do I get this feeling that Kellyanne Conway like keeps Torah under her bed or like in the basement, and once a week she goes down there and like takes off that blonde wig?
Well, I mean, if she did, it would only be to keep Trump away from her.
There you go.
One of those people. Ooh. Although he does like Bibi Netanyahu, another guy who's going to The Hague. Anyway, I just acted out a meme. I was just Kermit the Frog, like, but that don't but confront that, me now.
Now, before theater nerds jump on me, which was the Shakespeare play about the woman disguising as a man to infiltrate a court?
The Shakespeare play?
There was one. I just can't remember what it was. As You Like It?
That's what I thought it was. Speaking of theater nerds, these kids were kind of, their acting range was kind of grade school theater nerd, don't you think?
Twelfth Night.
It was Twelfth Night. Okay. It was Twelfth Night. Thank you.
You're welcome. Like, let's break this down a little bit. After, you know, Flotsam and Jetsam show up with the order to buy the home or whatever, the final offer to buy away the home.
Oh, well, they get issued a subpoena.
Or something. Again,
something vaguely rich people threatening.
They try and hand off a legal document to people who are not authorized to have that legal document.
Yeah, let's give the thing that says your dad will no longer own your home to a 17-year-old Josh Brolin. Thanos himself, my goodness.
He's going to snap his fingers.
Mm.
Dude, he snapped his fingers all over. What was her name? Amy?
Yeah.
Andy, excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so these two dudes in tan suits, like, deliver this kind of, you know, cease and desist letter. The kids are bummed out, which, understandably so. If your parents just lost their home in front of all of your friends, that is a shitty day.
Yes.
And then they go up into the attic for some reason, which is a place apparently they've never been before. And they start dressing up like pirates and shit, and they find a treasure map. Because Chunk apparently just walks around flailing his arms and knocking things over like a fat kid.
Well, they find a treasure map, and then they find a framed article about Chester Cobblepot.
Copperpot. You kept wanting him to be the Penguin.
I did. I still do kind of want him to be, but hey, apparently I can't be that lucky.
How is that not the plot of a Batman something? There's a treasure hidden somewhere in Gotham, and everyone's going at, like,
the Batman version of It's a Mad, Mad,
yes!
Mad World.
How great would that be? Because you know that the Joker would play dirty, and you know that the Penguin would play dirty, and you know that the Riddler would play dirty.
They would all play dirty.
And Two-Face would need a fresh doubloon.
I have a feeling that the Riddler would be the guy who tells that one person that the river is, in fact, shallow when it wasn't.
Why, you kid, it's just sinking up to his neck. And the person that's sinking, Calendar King?
Oh, Calendar Man? Maybe.
Calendar Man or Clock King is the one I was thinking of.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Oh, God, there's so many terrible Batman. Isn't there a Condiment King, too? Batman has some of the greatest and worst rogues. Here's the thing. Todd Phillips, Joker, great movie, saw it. There should now be a moratorium. DC should put its foot down saying Joker can't appear in anything for 10 years. Crack out a new... You can make something scary with the Riddler. I know Jim Carrey took the role and then pooped all over it. But, like, there's that whole thing in the New 52 where he takes over the town for, like, 2 years. Like, it's awesome. It's great.
Do the Mad Hatter in the Scarecrow movie when they're just making everybody hallucinate their worst fears.
How great would that be?
Or Bane, because it's not that he's big and strong, that he was actually clever enough to let everyone out of Arkham Asylum first to tire Batman out so we could then finish him.
Yeah, I mean, what I would really like, if they could, which maybe, who knows, one day, God willing, do an Arkham Asylum movie. How great would that be? Where, like, Batman, or, God help you, do Arkham City, where Bruce Wayne is arrested for something. Mm. And everyone gets out. Like,
well, in the Gotham TV show, they had a Dr. Hugo Strange show up for a few episodes, and it was the Asian guy in Jurassic Park.
Hong.
Yeah, that actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And he made a great Hugo Strange.
Well, I'm just sick of the Joker being in everything. And I mean, again, I have nothing against Heath Ledger. I have nothing against Joaquin Phoenix. I have nothing against Jack Nicholson, etc. Mark Hamill, also very strong.
I can think of one person that we have something against in this regard.
Cesar Romero?
Jared Leto.
Because you didn't mention him at all.
No,
we're good. We can leave it at that.
Yep, we're leaving it there.
But the thing is, we've had one Penguin. And guess what? I like Danny DeVito. Batman Returns might be up there for me in maybe the top three Batman movies.
We've had Catwoman twice. If you count Halle Berry.
You should.
Three times.
Weren't there two? Eartha Kitt and...
Julie Newmar.
And Michelle Pfeiffer and Halle Berry.
Well, and then
Anne Hathaway.
That makes five, I think.
Aaron Eckhart was Two-Face for all of 2 minutes. He was fine. It's just do more. Billy Dee Williams. You know what it would have been? Half a mustache. That's it. They would have just burned off it. My God.
So,
what a tragedy.
It's funny how we've gone from kid adventure movie to Batman fanfic, but hey.
You know what, Mikey? The way we're going to win back our father's house is if we all join a hockey team. And then we, these mighty Goonies, can take on the whole team and
win
all
this.
Where did they
get the name
Goonies? I think
the
neighborhood is the Goondocks.
Down on the Goondock.
On the Goondock.
I mean, I was thinking it was Goon because they were idiots and they were goons or whatever. But then the bullies call them Goonies.
Well, it's the bullies are all rich snobs, and the Goondocks might be the poor part of town, so that could be why.
This is such a classic, like, Reagan era, like, mm-hmm. We're going to buy up this. If only we could have a sexy bikini car wash, we could buy back every... like,
Okay, Morty. That bikini car wash has a good idea, Morty.
Dude, there's, like, if you Googled bikini car wash and then, like, no, if you IMDb searched bikini car wash,
you get way too many results.
So don't just Google. Well, I mean, Google it, but with like safe search on, or no, secret search, whatever. You know, I've clearly never looked at anything illicit ever online ever. But yeah, I mean, it's the plot of like the great bikini off-road adventures, like car wash. Or ski comedies. It's always like that.
There is one good element about this, and it's that they do keep
Corey Feldman.
Yeah. No,
he has almost no lines. The Feld dog is almost
Chunk
silent.
Gets the most lines,
unfortunately.
Chunk takes over the movie. It's Sean Astin's movie, and then Chunk shoves his fat face and and takes it over.
The thing that works about this movie the most, though, is they do keep it limited to something that actually would make sense for kids. You know, being obsessed with pirates, all the villains actually are fairly tame by any other standards, but they're pretty scary in this context.
And I will say, it's Dick Donner who did Superman. He's done a lot of things. He and Corey Feldman are the connections to this month, right?
Right.
I mean, we could have called it Dick Donner month, but we'll eventually do Superman, I assume.
And Lethal Weapon 2,
which he was kind of a part of, and Dick Donner. We should only do Dick Donner sequels where he's kind of a part of it. But regardless, like, there is a certain amount of this which is beautiful. There are some Spielberg spots, like, because Spielberg produced this, and there's some really, other than just, like, the weird family dynamics, there is some very Spielberg-y parts to this, which is phenomenal. Well,
the entire plot, and I think we were talking about this, Spielberg was a big fan of those Carl Banks comics that he did for Disney about Scrooge and Scrooge's adventures.
Yeah, sure.
This feels exactly like one of those.
When I first saw the Fratellis, I'm like, it's Ma Beagle and the Beagle Boys.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense.
They get out of prison by, you know, a classic comedy kid thing where one of the Fratellis pretends to be hanging himself, and then they burn down the whole prison?
Yeah, because there's that long shot of this guy with a gas can dumping it outside the prison.
And then he starts it with a bullet. Like,
is anybody paying attention out there?
No, of course not.
Well,
but
Reagan's America, the funding was cut, I guess.
Right. The asylum. It starts out very, what is it? Mayberry. It's very Mayberry RFD. Like, what are you doing? Oh, a lynching.
I'm just dumping some gas along the highway. Don't mind me.
And then...
Well, they failed to nip the fire in the bud, I'm just saying.
No, I'm going to...
Let it wash over you for another second.
Ooh, that's just a cleansing joke. And then these kids who come across this pirate map, end up finding the Fratelli's house, which is just their, you know, it's a safe house.
They're just following the woods at first, and they come across it, and I think they think it's a restaurant.
I think it is a restaurant that's closed most of the year. It's like a tourist trap.
Right, because they said it has a summer look, and it ain't summer.
They then say, well, it clearly hasn't been open in years, because it's run down, and then they run into Ma, who's throw Mama from the train. The woman who must have come out of the womb at the age of 65.
And she only lived to be, I think, 59. I looked it up on IMDb.
We were talking about Ernest at one point earlier, but, like, love the guy. Really do. I have nothing against Ernest. He made some terrible and racist movie. Ernest should never have gone to Africa. But when you smoke 17 packs a day, you look like you're in your 70s when he died at the age of 49 or 50. You know, and that's just what happens. Regardless, this is the same. We call her Mama, even though they call her Ma here, because she's the same woman from Throw Mama from the Train with Billy Crystal and Danny DeVito. Which
I've never seen.
Really?
Is that a Stay Tuned?
That may be a Stay Tuned. Although, the real Stay Tuned, speaking of Ma movies, is Stop or My Ma Will Shoot, which is just...
Sylvester Stallone.
It's a Sly movie, and it is... I mean, if you want to do a Ma month, because... Throw Mom from the Train is Strangers on a Train, but it's a comedy with Billy Crystal in the 80s. So everyone thought it would land, and you ignore everything else, right? Eventually, we'll do the classic dyad of Twins and Junior.
Oh, boy.
Which, again, Danny DeVito just, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, but is it Danny DeVito? You know, we are perfect twins. And just and that's the pitch.
Good Lord. You're right. You are right.
Eventually, they get into what you guys refer to as Universal theme park section, the traps and the water slides.
They figure out that it's under the fireplace in this rundown restaurants. And by this time, originally, it's just those four kids. But they meet up with
their brother,
Josh Brolin, who was chasing after them. And then they meet up with another group of people that includes Andy and those and that other girl.
I think they ditched the country club jerk after the bike incident.
That's right. They essentially show up at this kind of abandoned house. The girls think it's just an abandoned house. The guys have been following it for a while there. But, you know, credit to Dick Donner. This is more diverse than a lot of the kid action movies at the time. And they all kind of hide underneath the fireplace, mainly because the Fratellis come back.
And it turns out there's a dead guy in the freezer.
Yeah.
Well, because they are villains, and they're like, well, Chunk, if you can't fit down here because you're fat, fatty, fat, 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 why don't you go get
the cops.
And the first car he waves down to get help, of course, is the Fratellis, and that's when he starts getting, well, like you said, threatened, tortured.
Well, that's where they threaten to stick his hand in a blender, so he talks about puking over the theater balcony.
Yeah, and he goes, just tell us everything.
And everything includes, like, apparently everything from sexual shame to, like, barfing in public to just being a fatty, fat, fat, fat. Like, I keep making fat jokes. That's his kind of thing. He's a fat club. He's like John Belushi in Animal House.
Way late in the movie, after they meet Sloth, he makes jokes like, wow, you're as hungry as I am. And so at that point, you know, fair game.
Well, and he has like food on him constantly. Like he goes, guys, when I feel hungry, and I only feel hungry when I'm nervous.
He is literally wearing the same shirt that Newman wore in Jurassic Park in that opening scene at the restaurant in Costa Rica.
Oh, dude, he's willing to sell them out for doubloons. That kid ate all the doubloons. He's going to shit them out. He's going to sell them to whatever that guy's name is.
Wasn't that a South Park episode when they all get trapped in the mine?
Oh, you're right. Ew. Everyone rips this movie off. First of all, it's, you know, I guess Stay Tuned, but I don't know if anyone can rightfully give this a bad ranking, because it's a competent movie, but it's, and everyone references it. It's not like Sleepaway Camp where it's a terrible movie and everyone references it.
Everyone references Sleepaway Camp?
Kind of, yeah. Well, I mean, but it's the butt of jokes. Okay.
Right, yeah.
This movie is not excellent, but everyone references it. It's like,
I really do think it's like one of those things where, I don't know, Seinfeld's been in syndication for so long, everyone's seen it, everybody's ripped off all of its jokes and all of its plot lines. So somebody who's seen all those ripoffs is going to come to Seinfeld and be like, oh, this is nothing special.
We could almost take bets here, but like, what's Chunk, the actor who plays Chunk, whose name I can look up, but I probably shouldn't. be bothered. Is he going to show up first on Robot Chicken, or is he going to show up on Stranger Things, right?
Like, I imagine he cameoed in Stranger Things. I know he's not an actor anymore. I think he's got a very successful law career going, so good for him.
Or whatever. Like, but you pay a guy $1,000, he'll show up. Yes, I mean, you're right. His last thing was Perfect Harmony, a TV movie in 1991. Or... before that, he was in Scooby-Doo and the Ghoul School.
That's not a thing that exists.
It was. I mean, you do realize if we wanted to, we could end this show today and do only Scooby-Doo-based things, episode by episode and theme by theme, and retire at 50. Like,
you know, if you're willing to fund our Patreon.
Let's not give full ideas to the Scooby-Doo thing just yet.
Girl, I will talk about Velma until although if you guys are around and watching just, you know, Cartoon Network as you do, watch Be Cool Scooby-Doo. It is hilarious.
I don't have cable.
It's new.
All right,
so I mean, they get to the Cave of Wonders.
They keep going down and they're actually following the map, but they realize that there's a whole bunch of Rube Goldberg traps scattered throughout this cave,
and it's pirate treasure, man. So you have Sean Astin, who's kind of a step ahead, and then you have a bunch of people at the back who are kind of bumbling and they're a little bit behind. And so he's trying to make sure that no one gets injured and that no one triggers the traps. And every so often something kind of gets triggered. I mean, we start with the giant pendulous kind of boulders is where he first realizes that they're traps.
Right.
As they find Cobble Pot or Copper Pot or whatever.
Copper Pot.
They find his corpse with a Lou Gehrig baseball card is probably worth more than the treasure at this point.
Just leave with that card and you've paid for the house.
Which, frankly, should have been at the end because they did pocket everything from his wallet, as the Fratelli says at one point. At this point, the side plot is that after nearly getting his hand stuck in the blender, plot A removes a rock which releases a bunch of bats, which freaks out the Fratellis. So they release Chunk and throw them into the room with Sloth. He drops a baby Ruth bar. They have like a weird makeout scene with the baby Ruth bar. And then we cut back to thankfully, what's become the A-plot, which is them advancing towards the treasure.
This is when the movie starts getting kind of interesting, when they're going into the maze underneath the hill in Astoria.
Right. Well, there's a bunch of scenes where they're just showing how connected this thing is to the rest of the town, like when they're pulling pipes and utterly ruining the country club's plumbing, or the wishing well.
The wishing well scene. I mean, because again, you have to imagine above is a mixture of, I don't know, joysticks where the wealthy guys in town are like, these people are poor, we need to get rid of them. And like Caddyshack, there's a country club, which is weird because the country club already exists, but there's no golf course, I guess? Whatever.
Maybe the tennis was first.
I don't know. I don't think it matters.
You know,
that
we
much.
Almost had a joke there, Matt, and you just pulled it away.
I kill them all.
You kill them all.
Well, we're never going to say die on our end, Matt.
Myopia never says die to a bad joke which should have died. And then, like you said, the wishing well, they realize they're under the well. This is where the frat boys come back.
Well, this is where I think they're trying to get some of the people that are in there out of there, and then the frat boys come back, and then they all decide to stay down and keep going towards the ship.
They pull up, they think is Andy, and it's just the jacket, I think, that Rich Jerk had given her, and
right,
he's not happy.
Right.
And luckily, he disappears from the movie after that.
Until the very end. It's crowded scene satire. Everyone shows back up. It proves that the kids are right, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Sean Astin, after a heartfelt pitch, convinces them to keep going. And we eventually end up on a pirate ship.
First there's the bone organ.
The bone organ.
Which I think one of the girls knows how to play the piano, kind of.
Poorly.
Well, she took lessons a long time ago and forgot them for the most part, I think.
Right. Essentially, she has to get 3 correct notes on a musical riff.
Well, it's so weird because it's like they're walking into a death metal video because there's a skeleton in the middle of the room and there's a piano made out of literal bones. Like, it's just like ribs or fingers or something, and that's what they have to play.
She has to get 3 notes correct or 4 notes wrong and they all die.
I think it's 4 correct, and I don't. If they make too many mistakes, if what the clue says, they'll surely die.
And she's playing this weird It's not even a song. Like, it's Spielberg, man. You need the do-do-do. Like, you need the Close Encounters thing or something. But, you know, whatever. She eventually gets it right, and a very large stone is dropped by a very clear string, and...
Well, there was a scene earlier, speaking of booby traps, where Sean Astin had found that string that was just, like, kind of buried in the ground. He's like, hey, guys, look what I found. And I think that was what undid the pendulum.
Right. Then we end up in a log flume, and then we end up on a pirate ship.
We end up in an underground lagoon with a pirate ship in the middle.
Yeah. That's kind of where the gold is. That's where everyone is. The Fratellis are right behind. They... circumvent every other device by just kind of scooshing.
So in this case...
After racking themselves a couple times.
Yes.
Oh, right, because there's a scene...
Short Round has like oil in his Nikes. Everyone's wearing Nikes.
All right, so this is where... Because Chris Columbus wrote the script, so this is probably where the Home Alone bits came from.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Short Round is walking across a log flume, and in order to slow down the Fratellis, he's got an oil slick or something in his shoe, so he sprays the log with oil. So when Joey Pants and Robert Davi try and cross it, they both slip, and that they just hit their crotches on that log.
Ma! Ma!
Ma! No, we get the high-pitched voice. We get the we get the full slapstick range.
We get the testicular trauma jokes left and right. Well, and further, we can even back up a little bit, but like Short Round or Data, whatever. It's the same character. His like he has this weird like fake chatter teeth that shoot up into a wall so he doesn't fall in a spike pit.
Oh yeah, that's right.
He has like flashlights lit by a battery pack that burns out immediately.
Because it's blinding everybody on top of everything else.
Well, again, he comes into the James Bond theme. It's all bad Q gadgets.
There's some kind of stereotypical humor in this too, because way back at the beginning,
there's that bit where
this is a poor family that's still able to hire a maid to help clean the house and prepare for them to get their furniture out, I guess. They ask Corey Feldman to translate, and probably the most dialogue he has in this movie all at once is when he is told to translate what the mom is saying into Spanish, and he does it deliberately badly.
Well, I mean,
saying there's like sex torture devices in the attic.
And if she does a bad job, she'll be locked in a dungeon full of cockroaches with no food and water for two weeks.
And like, it's weird because he's actually speaking Spanish, but there's no joke. I don't get the joke.
Well, the joke is just pretty much this person speaks a different language than the mom does.
And you could abuse immigrants, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Reagan's America.
Reagan's America.
Well, good Lord, let's not cast stones.
You're right. Anyway, at the end, they find the treasure. It's inside, and Sean Astin's like, hey, we should leave this bit for...
Oh, he has a legit Alask Poor York monologue before that with One-Eyed Willie.
That everyone sees, which is a weird end to that scene. He says, grab all the treasure you want, but leave this for One-Eyed Willie.
It's Willie's.
This is Willie's portion. One quarter portion. And...
That's what Chunk grew up to be.
Oh, he sure did. That's 100% right.
He didn't want to pay them anything because he's eating it all himself.
And so they start loading up on gold. The Fratellis come back. There's a weird fight scene. Sloth comes out with Chunk.
Andy has to walk. Literally, there's a walk the plank scene.
And we already mentioned this, but earlier she made out with Mikey instead of
Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
Oh, and then they, of course, do it again after Josh Brolin drives in after her and... What's the joke? She's like asking, what happened to braces?
What happened to your braces? Which is a really gross thing to say to someone.
Yeah.
And he goes, I don't have braces. Mikey has braces. Wait a minute. And she kisses him again. And then they have a scene like, you know, for a kid, you kiss pretty good, which is a terrible thing to say. And she goes, you know what? If you keep kissing that good, you're going to have no problem kissing other girls. And you're just...
Later.
At the end of the movie, they escape, blah, blah, blah. Everyone shows up.
The Fratellis, what happens to them? Well, they're trying to escape the lagoon area, and they see lights to the outside, but it's covered with rocks. So what they decide to do is light one of the candles that Data has left over, which is, of course, a stick of dynamite. So that blows the area, but it also sets off a chain reaction that traps the Fratellis there.
Well, no, the Fratellis also grab a bit of One-Eyed Willie's gold.
Yeah.
And so they try to escape, but everything starts falling apart. The Fratellis come out after the kids. The cops arrest the Fratellis. And the people from the country club are there as well. Like, literally everyone shows up at the end of the movie.
Right. Up to and including the maid that Corey Feldman abused earlier.
Who finds in what was his marble bag a bunch of gems.
Because they were literally shoving gold in their pockets. But then when they all dove into the water, they removed it because they would sink otherwise.
Since, as douchebag's son says, we have another 50 houses to kick out after yours. It turns out that Mikey's dad becomes the old man from Up.
Yeah.
And that's how the movie ends, kind of. And then the ship sails into the distance along with any explanation for the rest of the plot.
And, well, everybody gets to see it, so I guess that vindicates the kids somehow.
Who knows?
It was a nice looking shot.
It was. It was a very pretty, and then Spielberg would steal it himself when he makes Hook.
Better movie than Hook, I think.
I would give it to you. It's also half an hour shorter than Hook, at least.
Yeah.
Hook is like, what, 235?
It was a lot longer than it needed to be.
Yeah, and at least here it gets it right, where it's the kids' movie.
Yeah.
Robin Williams kind of steals that movie at times when he doesn't need to be. And I think it's just that it was the 90s. No one could say no to Robin Williams.
Or Steven Spielberg.
And so the movie was 9 hours long. Eventually it will be broken up by Ken Burns. And anyway, let's do final judgments. Sudsy, what do you think?
I'm not sure if this is the first time I've ever seen this movie all the way through front to back. I feel like I have before, but that's because I've seen so many other things that reference it. Be it Robot Chicken, be it Stranger Things, be it weird references on Saturday Night Live back in the day. It's one of those things that I think's lost its luster over time just because it's not as original as it used to be. I mean, back when this was first released, I have a feeling it was more warmly regarded because nothing like it really existed for kids at the time. And now, thanks to the Goonies, there's a lot of stuff that does. So the Goonies doesn't see as special. But even so, I still think it makes a good impact. If it's not bad for like a weekend afternoon, if you've got everything done, want to just lay on the couch and pop something on, you can do a lot worse than this.
Thank you, Matt.
I didn't really think it was that entertaining, but my brain is starting to, I'm real tired and my brain is starting to go. So maybe it's better when your mind is sharper.
It's 8:30 right now, so it's almost time.
8:30 Pacific time, maybe.
Don't make excuses for the movie. So Matt thought it was bad. I will say, if you liked this as a kid, there's nothing wrong with it. I think it held up fine. I enjoyed it. I will say, the problem with other movies in this era that we've done, things like Labyrinth and Dark Crystal, they're too high fantasy. This is what kids would imagine, right? There's a treasure. I can find the treasure. Let's go on a little adventure. And frankly, there's no special effects, really. It's all practical. It looks good. There's a few effects shots, but this movie is fun. It's stupid. I found the kids, some of them, Chunk, particularly annoying. I found the Data stuff kind of annoying. Like, these kids are precocious. I mean, the thing I noticed most is not just that ripped it off, but like, this weird precocious kid movement starts here. And that is something they should have crushed a long time before it reached its pinnacle. But I mean, overall, this movie is fun, charming. I knew where it was going. I'm fine knowing where it was going. If you like this, you'll still like it. There's nothing that I was like, ooh, that doesn't hold up. It wasn't even, I was worried that the Data stuff would turn out racist. It really doesn't.
The Corey Feldman stuff with the maid was...
Yeah, but that's at least 5 minutes. It doesn't keep coming back. Like, he then can...
Yeah.
The fact that he can speak Spanish helps because he's translating the Spanish the entire movie, right? Like, it is still setting something up. It's not great, but I don't know. I think it's totally fine. But speaking of people not understanding minorities, we have some stuff coming up. First, when we come back... in February, we're going to be doing Rush Hour. So come enjoy Rush Hour.
So do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Exactly. And then we're doing AVP. And we might actually do AVP first. We're figuring this out. But Daniel, why are we doing AVP?
Because coming soon to our Patreon feed is an exclusive series where we're going to watch every movie of a particular franchise. And the first one we're going to do is the Alien franchise.
That's right. And so by the end of January, Alien will be out. Then February, Aliens will be out. March, Alien Route 3 will be out. And then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we will do all 8 of the movies, but I have talked over with the gentleman at the table. AVP and AVP2 are going to be free to you. They'll be on the regular feed, but it's a way to tease you into listening to the rest of them with us on Patreon. And for those of you who don't know, we've joined up with the Geekly Oddcast / Outer Worlds and Here Be Tigers with a Y to do a Patreon. It's on our Facebook group. It's everywhere where we are. And in fact, by the time you have heard this, we've already done live streaming episodes. So you've missed out hearing us watch the movie. But yeah, we're working on stuff to make sure we fill it out. And over the course of this year, we have two more feeds coming. Last week, if you heard, or I guess 2 weeks ago, if you heard, Daniel, you're bringing back Dismembered.
I am indeed. I still haven't. I'm still not ready to announce the topic quite yet, but that will be definitely coming soon. And that's going to be another exclusive for Patreon.
We'll talk about that, but I think maybe we should at least start on the main feed okay. So you guys can hear it with us. In April, John Copsey and presumably Daniel and I again will be bringing back Mission Briefing to talk about Bond, and we'll be doing it Bond by Bond.
The first one for that will be the newest Bond in theaters, No Time to Die.
And then we'll do Spectre, and then we'll go backwards through the list. And then finally, we're going to bring back a show, start a show of mine, a Hoffman history program that tentatively, we don't even have a title for, but I'm going to work on with regular panelist Steve. So if you want to hear Hoffman talking history, Hoffman on History, man, we'll be back. So stay tuned next week and every future week as we put a piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Why Would You Defend Your Childhood is a product of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced by Nick Hoffman, Daniel Suttis, and Matthew Quinn, and edited by Daniel Suttis. Our theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin McLeod from incomptech.com, licensed under Creative Commons license by Attribution 3.0 license.